For almost 1 year, citizens of West Berlin had to rely on the Allied aircraft for their daily bread. They literally had to place their trust every day on those planes penetrating Joseph Stalin's blockade. Is it hard to trust daily in someone else? Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come. Hello, friend. Say, have you ever heard the kinds of stories where a cold, freezing orphan is picked up off the street and taken in a limousine to the home of a wealthy woman? Usually you hear those sorts of tales around Christmas time, where it's snowing and the little boy is freezing to death trying to sell copies of the New York Times on a street corner at a nickel each. These go back quite a few years, as you can tell. Well, I suppose June 24 isn't the best time to use such an illustration, but you know, there's a common thread that I've noticed in one or two of them. The little ragamuffin ends up in this palatial estate, and someone gives him a warm bath and a new suit of clothes to wear, and then there's a huge supper with more food than this starving little boy's ever seen in his life, and then a fire in the fireplace and more gifts and presents, and finally he's tucked into a wonderfully soft bed with a down comforter and a candle in the window casting its soft glow throughout the room as the snow gently falls outside. Well, you get the idea. But friend, here's the point I want to get to. The woman adopts this little boy as her own son. And sometimes, as I've heard these stories, a day or two later, she, or maybe the butler, will catch him stuffing his pockets with food from the kitchen. Extra bread and cheese and cookies, maybe an apple. Now, he's just had a very nutritious lunch. Why is he sneaking extra food under his shirt? And finally, the nice rich lady has to set this boy down on her lap and explain to him that from now on, son, there's always going to be plenty of food. There'll always be a breakfast, always be a lunch, always a supper. He doesn't need to store up food. He doesn't need to sneak a sandwich out of the pantry in case the goodwill runs out. You're my little boy now, she tells him. I'll always take good care of you. There'll always be plenty of food to eat. Again, why'd I tell that story on a hot June 24? Well, our series title all this week goes like this. Storing up extra manna just in case. You know, often we're like that legendary little boy. The providences of God come along, and sure, we're grateful for them. We thank Him for them. But we can't be exactly sure that things are going to continue, that the blessings will be here tomorrow like they were yesterday. And so, like that adopted orphan, maybe we slip a loaf of bread under our shirt for the proverbial rainy day. The word manna, of course, takes us clear back into the Old Testament, Exodus chapter 16. Remember, the children of Israel out in the desert of Sin needed food, and God promised to provide it for them. And sure enough, morning after morning, these, quote, thin flakes like frost were out on the ground just waiting to be picked up. People didn't have to grow the food, they didn't have to do the dishes, they didn't even have to pay a restaurant bill on the way out. All they had to do was go out and gather it, and remember where it came from. But you know, then God gave them two sets of very interesting instructions. First of all, the manna was only going to fall 6 days a week. Every Friday morning, they'd find a double portion that would keep, without Whirlpool refrigerators, until the next day, which was their Sabbath, of course. However, on the other 5 days, there was exactly enough food just for that day. Heaven's catering service apparently knew how to send exactly enough miracle manna just for that day. In fact, through Moses, God gave specific instructions that the people were not to gather more than 1 day's worth. I'm quoting, "No one is to keep any of it until morning." Now, those are God's exact words. Well, that seems insignificant enough. But the Bible goes on to record the fact that there were those who didn't accept that divine mandate. Now, whether they wanted to save time and just go for groceries once a week or sleep in late the next morning or what, we're not told. It might have been that some of them on Tuesday simply didn't trust that God would still be their provider on Wednesday. And the point is they'd go out one morning and try to scoop up the next day's supply as well. But by Wednesday morning, Tuesday's leftovers would be filled with maggots and bad smells, the Bible tells us. I find it interesting that the Friday manna was good for 2 days, but not the rest of it. And clearly God wanted to teach the children of Israel, and they were like children in many respects, to learn to trust Him every single day for their food. And you know, for 40 long years there in the wilderness, the manna kept coming. 6 days a week, 52 weeks a year, for 40 years. And God never once failed. That's right. Right up until they came to the borders of the land of Canaan, it says at the end of the chapter, heaven's storehouse didn't run out. Well, now, friend, what significance does all this manna have for us? Most of us aren't able to relate to the idea of having to daily depend upon someone else for our allotment of bread. Now, contrast that, friend, with the Soviet blockade of West Berlin, which began 48 years ago today. That's right, on June 24, 1948, Stalin blockaded the city, and the West began an airlift that lasted for 321 days. More than 2 million people had to depend completely on those incoming planes for the food they ate. Those people were faithfully supplied by 1,592,787 tons that came to them from outside sources. In fact, their lives depended on those planes coming in. But today, hey, we get our food down at Safeway. And we pay for it with money we earned all by ourselves. True, many of us pray and ask God to bless it, and we may even thank Him for it, recognizing that our abilities and our earning power and the providences of having a good job is something He's done in our lives. But maybe here in 1996, we're not in circumstances where we have to literally and physically depend on Him on a day-by-day basis. And yet, friend, there may be ways, real ways, if you stop and think about it, where you do need God in your life, and you're frankly unwilling or afraid to depend on Him on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday basis. This week we want to explore some arenas of life where we either do or don't daily trust in heaven. Now, friend, listen. The Old Testament prophet Elijah was one of those who did. Now, even in the practical area of food, he was forced to learn to wait daily for heaven. Perhaps you recall hearing in your childhood how this bold man of God hid from an angry couple of people wearing crowns on their heads. Their names were Ahab and Jezebel. And for quite a stretch of time, Elijah received his food from heaven, delivered special delivery, now get this, by ravens. That's right. Chapter 17 of the book 1 Kings describes how down by the Kirith Ravine, or the brook Cherith, the King James says, Elijah received bread and meat every morning and every evening from ravens, who were commanded by God Himself to bring His servant daily food. But you know, I don't believe that food was the major area of testing for Elijah. Nope. Time after time, this prophet had to rely on God much more in the area of divine authority. The question for Elijah was this: would God back up His claim to be the one true God? Would He stand behind the incredible statements He directed Elijah to make in high places? Still in chapter 17 of this same book, 1 Kings, we read in verse 1 where Elijah went to our favorite king, Ahab, and said these startling words: "As the Lord God of Israel liveth before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word." Obviously, Elijah didn't say these words on his own. God had told him to say them. Still, would God back them up? Would God make a fool of him? Would heaven pull the rug out from under this simple prophet? Elijah himself couldn't stop the rain any more than you or I could, friend. But he had to place his dependence, his daily dependence, even his reputation, on the willingness of God to do what he said he would do. Just 13 verses later, Elijah tells a starving widow who lived in Zarephath, "Don't make yourself a cake with that little bit of oil and flour. You make me a cake first, and then I promise you, God won't let your oil and flour ever run out again." Now, there's a test that hit both of these hungry people. Elijah had to make such an incredible statement, seemingly selfish and certainly bold and presumptuous. And the widow had to have enough faith to believe that this message came from God and that heaven would back up what Elijah was saying. But chapter 18 is where Elijah truly had to show a manna kind of faith as he faces down the 450 prophets of the false god Baal up there on the top of Mount Carmel. Elijah built up an altar to his god, remember? Then he covered it with 12 huge barrels of water and then declared that the true God was going to come through with fire from heaven. Before there was the slightest bit of a flame, the tiniest spark, Elijah looked into the eyes of 450 enemies plus King Ahab, and then turned his face to heaven and said, "Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again." And friend, as you keep reading through these incredible stories, God never fails. Oh, the faith of man fails, yes. In fact, even Elijah himself had a lapse in chapter 19, a crisis of doubt. Even Elijah wondered aloud at one point if God was able. And yes, God assured him, he was. The manna would always be there. The promises would always be there. The divine presence would never fail. And here in the year 1996, do you know something? Nothing's changed.
It certainly hasn't, Lonnie. Thank you for that reminder that God still provides for our daily needs. Friend, this is Kenneth Richards with a free gift to send you today. It's entitled Sack Lunch Miracles by Lonnie and our writer-producer, David Smith. This little book beautifully portrays more spiritual glimpses into the ways God provides daily for everything we need. For your free copy of Sack Lunch Miracles, write The Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. For our many Canadian listeners, the address is Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055. Again, 1-800-872-0055. And by the way, please remember to include the call letters of this station. Lonnie?
Thanks so much, Ken. Tomorrow we'll continue with our series, Storing Up Extra Manna, Just in Case. Here's our Tuesday title, Here Today and Gone Tomorrow. Many of our human heroes and providers disappear just when you need them most. How about God? By the way, Voice of Prophecy is a listener-supported faith ministry, and that means simply we depend on our listeners for the ongoing ministry of this broadcast, and each of you, a big, big thank you. Till tomorrow, Lonnie Melashenko reminding you that it's always true, friend, God loves you.
Allow me to share with you two news reports that just might be linked. The first report featured research sponsored by cable television companies. The study concluded that watching violent material had significant negative impact on children's behavior. This study itself supported the contentions of watchdog groups that what is on the screen influences what happens in life. The second report concerned the sentencing in Chicago of the killers of Derek Morris. Derek had been dropped from a 14th-story window because he refused to steal candy. Derek was 5. His killers were 10. Some people argue that children only 10 years old can't really be held accountable for their behavior. They don't fully understand the seriousness of their criminal activity. And I am sure it's true those 10-year-olds can begin to imagine the devastation they've caused in the hearts of Derek's parents. But 5-year-old Derek's stubborn refusal to participate in crime shows that even children know right from wrong. I wonder if a 5-year-old can have conscience enough to refuse to steal candy. Why can't adults have courage enough to replace TV programming which prompts 10-year-olds to kill? For the Voice of Prophecy and the Seventh-day Adventist Church, this is Frank Gonzalez.